Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The holiday season is here, and so are holiday savings. In honor of Black Friday, PodSwag is offering some amazing deals on products from all your favorite podcasts, up to and including James Bonding, where you can buy a Kananga balloon or pigeon double take shirt. Now, Matt's not here to record this ad, so I'll tell you.
But I am here to edit this episode, so I'll tell you you should buy a Kananga balloon t-shirt. Bye.
You should probably buy a pigeon double take t-shirt. Guys, tell everyone what the craziest moment in all of James Bond history is by wearing it proudly on your chest. Be one of the first 100 orders, and you'll get free shipping on your entire purchase. Or take advantage of one of PodSwag's other amazing offers, including 30% off t-shirts and apparel, 20% off accessories like socks, pins, and totes, or 25% off esoterica items like stickers, glassware, and posters. There may even be some brand new James Bonding posters that Matt and I spent a lot of time signing. So you go to podswag.com. It's all happening on Black Friday. That's podswag.com.
That's it. I'm only doing Avatar references from here on.
Well, lucky for you, they're making 9 more. I think it's actually 5.
4, right?
4.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to James Bonding.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Matt as well. Today, you only live twice with our good friend and third time guest record, I think, right?
No.
Third time
For
guest
real?
Record. Yeah, yeah, I think so, Paul.
I'm the first of three?
Yeah.
No, wait.
Wait,
you're tied. Amanda
with
and Maria. Who will win anyway?
Who will win anyway?
Who will win anyway?
Who will win anyway?
Who will win?
Who will win
anyway?
Wait, I was on for You Only Live.
This is Paul F.
No, Tompkins. You Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die. You were also our
Dr. No.
Second guest, Dr. No.
Dr. No, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's where we all figured out Sylvia Trench.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
The
that's
filthiest right. Bond name
Low-key
without being
filthiest Bond name. Guys, thanks for having me back.
Paul F. Tompkins, it's great to have you back. We are doing a month of Paul's and we didn't even know it.
Yeah.
It just worked out this way.
Paul-vember. So. We are going.
You Only Live Twice. Have you seen this? When's the last time you had?
I must have seen it when I was a wee child.
So a long time. It's been
yes,
a long time.
Yes, long time. I haven't seen even a clip from it in all that time. Like there was so much stuff that I forgot about this movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it's good.
Mm. Oh, that's
– yeah.
That's a you're coming out of the gate, huh?
Yeah, I now, don't think it's good.
That's good. We should declaim. This is one that's always ranked low on my list. However, this time I liked it more.
I will 100% agree with Matt Gourley on this.
Mm-hmm.
Liked it more than I have in the past.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like this round through I've been liking them more. I wonder if it's because last time We were coming.
Are we having like double nostalgia for something we were nostalgic for?
We might be, but you know, you and I started that podcast after a long, just personal Bond trips. And so maybe we were facing a little fatigue, and I kind of went away from Bond for a while after that podcast because I was really fatigued.
Yeah, we both stopped.
The dark times.
We put it down.
We'll see how we are. I bet you that by the end of this run of films, whatever films they are, will suffer a little bit because, you know.
We'll see. I mean, because you have both seen these so many times, right?
Yeah, right.
Multiple times. Yeah. And I think that you are bound to be looking at new things. There's probably stuff that strikes you as, you know, even though it's familiar, like, oh, that was actually really well done. You know, that that was a good sequence.
Yeah.
I think you're analyzing them subconsciously. You're analyzing them in a different way.
That's right.
Than you would before.
Yeah. This one's plot was better to me as just a detective mystery plot. I don't remember the misogyny being as heavy the last time I watched this one. There's a lot of just kind of real dated humor in this. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And but it's this, more I so know now.
I know that's the case with Bond, but this one specifically, that is not something that stuck in my memory as much as watching it this time through.
I think it's always, whenever you take a gander, I have the coffee mug of this movie. Because I just thought it was very funny to have Sean Connery.
The coffee mug of this movie.
I have the View to a Kill coffee.
Yeah, I got Matt the View to a Kill coffee mug. I picked up this one because.
Which movie do you have the coffee mug of?
Oh, I think. Oh, my God, I gotta get out of here.
But it is, you know, I look at it many mornings and it's just James Bond being bathed by Japanese women.
Yeah.
That's the
coffee. Oh, that's what's on the mug?
That's what's on the mug.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. That's the poster. That's the mug.
Oh, wow.
It's that was the poster?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's leave.
Like
with
you're
that.
Saying in 1967, when they were marketing this movie to people, that was the that was the only image on the poster, or there was other stuff?
Yeah, I don't know this
poster. I think there's other stuff on the poster, but it's mainly that. I'll show you the image and really wakes me up every morning to what the world was and what it should be.
Yeah, the misogyny in this movie, it crosses over from just, oh, that was of its time into gross.
Yeah.
You know,
there are a few moments of that for sure. Yeah.
Cause
yeah.
it feels very pointed. You know, it feels like let's get another one of those in here.
Same with the racism. Like there's time,
you know
the
what,
time
guys?
Racism. And there's also real transcendent. Doesn't matter. Yeah. What era racism
it is the only thing on the poster.
Wow.
You see?
Oh, and he also stands there with a gun off to the side.
Yeah. Right.
So don't worry.
Just to tell you, there's some spy craft.
Yeah.
But, you know, I went to Japan last year, and this is the first time I've watched this movie since going to Japan. So there was a kind of, I don't know, like travelogue feel to it. And I went to Himeji Castle where they do the ninja training with the traditional ninjas and the modern ninjas.
The ninjas with guns.
Yes. Which I love, but
you do really get quite a you sort of. I do enjoy how much of Japan you get in this, and
it's
how much of Japanese
Japan,
culture you're getting in it. So you're like, let's see a wedding, let's see a funeral.
I don't think I remember that as well, because usually he really globetrots. Here he's just Hong Kong and Japan, right?
Yeah,
and I think
any
it's
England,
you know,
tiny bit of no, because he's not even in England because they're on the submarine.
Right, the whole thing takes place in Asia.
The Orient.
The Orient.
The mysterious Orient.
Thank God he didn't get that pig face woman he was promised.
Oh, God.
I mean, that was a great prank. I got it. As many problems as I had with this film, that was a hilarious joke on James Bond. You're going to have to marry a pig face lady. And then it's, no, she's beautiful. After he's looking disgustedly at these two women who are less than drawings of women.
Sure.
And are they pig face woman number one and pig face woman number two in the credit? Oh.
I didn't check the credits.
Like, what script were they reading?
We need to take a look.
Yeah.
Close up. A withered old crone steps forward. She raises her head. Bond is disgusted. Another crone steps forward, even more withered and lined with years and laughs.
Just when you thought the first one could not be out pig-faced.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Roald Dahls with us. that is also a thing I always forget until I'm watching the opening credits, is that Roald Dahl wrote the screenplay for this
movie. Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
That guy's problematic.
Yeah. Well, they traded. Ian Fleming wrote the screenplay to Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
And Roald Dahl wrote this screenplay.
That's why Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is so much fun.
I've never seen it. I've still never seen it.
It's a children's movie that hates children.
I think we should. We have to do it.
We're going to see Chitty Chitty Bang.
We're going to add it.
We'll cover it on this because its crossover is huge. Frobe's in it. Ket Adam did the production design. Fleming.
And this is from my childhood memory. It's not good.
Isn't there a car called like the Kid Catcher or something like that?
A car? There's a character.
The Chitty Chitty Bang
Bang. The Child Catcher.
Holy shit.
He who scarred so many children. This dude is terrifying. Terrifying. And his title is his job. He goes out and he catches children.
But
child catcher.
For the government?
I think.
Are they wayward children, though, that are lost?
Oh.
I think it's any kid that's just loose in the streets. He will lure them with candy and cakes and pies.
Oh.
And then he will put them like a dog catcher
in a cart.
No.
Oh, we are.
This is a British actor. Oh, I hope I can remember this sequence. This guy, the actor, modeled his performance on Laurence Olivier's Richard III, I think.
Oh, okay.
And Laurence Olivier modeled his Richard III on some other person. There's this like this great line of influence and performance, and I can't remember, but it's worth looking up if you can find the story.
Okay.
Does it end up being like Multiplicity where the fifth version of this person just licks pizza? Classic film, Multiplicity.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for you.
We'll be covering that on an off week as well. Now, as there are some problematic issues with the script through Roald Dahl, I think he did do a great job with the plot. This is a plot that is
clear.
Easy to follow.
It is a clear plot with a clear plan.
I like the way it unfolds, too.
Absolutely. And this is, I will say, of all of the Sean Connery Bond movies, this is the most spy-y Bond that we get from
him. That maybe Dr. No I'd put up there with that, too.
Yes, but he assumes multiple identities in this one.
Yeah.
Where he does not do that in any other film.
Yeah. And also, I really, really love the opening of this film. The fact that you get this great special effects space sequence that at the time must have blown people away.
Yeah. It doesn't look bad.
No, it doesn't look bad. I guess in the term would be it holds up knowing how old it is. But just seeing that in that time and then seeing Bond killed – and then going straight to the opening titles, audiences must have just went, what's happening to my world? I don't know what's going on here.
Two things about the opening. The clearly British actors playing American astronauts.
Yes.
No astronaut. Hey, we're going outside a capsule now. Hey, it's great. We're in space. Get a load of this. The moon.
This capsule looks like Georgia.
And then the cut to James Bond is so abrupt. Mm-hmm. It's so abrupt.
Editing was something crazy back then. And also Peter Hunt, the editor of these films, was known for his abrupt editing. So, but usually in action sequences. So it's strange when you have something that's not to just so quickly smash cut to something like that.
It's sort of like, oh, I'm sorry. Should we come back?
Yeah. I also love that all the McDonnell Douglas? I don't know. Those space scientists have these uniforms, but then you cut to Hawaii and they're just wearing like short sleeve plaid shirts.
Well, you got to know where they are. You got to dress it up.
Yeah.
Sure. Dress skirts.
Yeah. I will say
Definitely Hawaiian.
As a fan of early American space travel, I did appreciate how accurate the Gemini capsule was, even though they call it a Jupiter capsule. And the
so they wouldn't get sued.
Yeah. NASA sued us. What'd we do? The hand nozzle thing that he uses in the EVA is accurate to what
Then I have a question about
Ed
this.
White used? Yeah, go ahead.
Because there's some design element in there that I just loved, and I couldn't find any practicality for it. Mm-hmm. So when they're in their seats, they're these like metal side pieces, but they have grommet holes and then just – like shoelaces along the sides of them. And I couldn't think about what that would possibly be for other than Ken Adam just going like, I saw this somewhere. I love the look of it.
I think that was a Ken Adam spruce up.
But yeah, who
spruce
knows?
Him up.
I wonder if that really is. But he's sort of notorious for looking at the real things and putting it in there. I don't know.
He did. Oh, man. There's a couple sets
notorious.
In this. There's, just, I mean.
Attention to detail.
He's infamous for it.
He's infamous for doing
this
what
guy
a job
in charge of design is infamous for his design.
I know.
And when the guy's lifeline gets severed, the astronaut, and he just immediately flies away.
Where is the summit that the like special councils are having in the snow where these geodesic domes are? Like that they all met in the Arctic to have a secret talk?
I loved it.
I did too, but where? They don't even give you a little subtitle of in the Arctic.
Doesn't matter.
What a drag that must have been. Why can't we go to a warm place?
And it seems like it would have been a little more pressing than to take the 24 hours travel time.
Exactly. Exactly. Get on the phone. Was that place just there already?
It's for that reason. It's the emergency summit camp.
Between only three nations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it only there was the UK, Russia, and the United States?
UK is the voice of reason of like, calm down, gentlemen. Yeah. You know, we've got our man.
Slow your roll, US.
I love that guy. That guy is so British. And I think the only reason he probably, I would wager that he didn't win the Who's the Most British, because when you get to Charles Grey later.
Oh boy.
Do you ever get to Charles Grey?
Yeah, yeah.
He may be the most British of the whole series, that character he's playing.
Oh, wow. Mm.
The knife in the back, Mr.
So you're giving him a one seed in our bracket.
I'd have to think about it, but yeah, I mean, he just trails off at times. Like, even the way he gets stabbed in the back.
Like,
yeah, he just freezes British. He doesn't even look pain. He just freezes upper crust. His stiff upper lip becomes a whole stiff upper body.
I've had a good innings. Cheerio.
Oh, I love that scene.
Why do Chinese girls taste different? Did we figure that out?
Ooh, that's your first one where it's just...
There's
you mean the first line James Bond speaks?
Yeah. There's many things wrong with it.
Yeah.
Across race lines, across gender lines, it's not good.
Yeah.
Excellent police response time in Hong Kong. Between machine guns going off and 17 police officers storming.
A dangerous Murphy bed that has a button that is just eminently pressable by accident, just sitting there on a post beam.
Yeah.
You don't want some Murphy bed that's fast to be able to be accessed that
also
quickly.
I love a Murphy bed that will in no time lift a 220-pound, 6'2" man with the bed.
I like how she sprang into action. Like, as soon as she hit that button, she is like, she's really selling the idea that we have a very limited amount of time to get this done. This guy could struggle. He could get out of that Murphy bed. I need to let these guys in immediately so they can shoot him.
And they run in with great speed. And I think even the film is in it because it feels like they undercrank the camera and everybody's running a little too quickly or something.
Yeah.
Like, really pressing.
Also, she could have just opened the door, I guess, and let them in, and they could have shot him in the bed.
Yeah. Wait, here's my question. Who was in on it?
I think they mention her later. Yeah. Because M says something about her later. Like, yeah.
She's in on it.
And the cops have to be, or their guns were replaced with blanks. They had to be. Wait a minute. Here's something strange.
Oh, is this
they
a Gloft?
They can't be blanks. This is a retro Gloft. Because when they lower the Murphy bed, there are bullet holes in the wall behind
them. Yes, I noticed that. Yeah.
And there's blood.
And he's got no body armor on.
He could have there could be a metal plate in that bed protecting him.
But how did the bullets get through?
The bullets don't go through him. He has no exit wounds.
But she would have had to make sure
or
he was lined
wounds.
Up exactly. Yes, I know.
That should have been the tip-off.
Wait a second.
I don't think this guy's really dead.
But he was bleeding. Very red blood.
Wait a minute.
This movie, this opening is a delight.
I love it. I love it.
It really is.
And after On the Heels of Skyfall, too, you really see the connection of just going to the titles on a cliffhanger of is Bond alive? Like, will we have a two-hour movie with no James Bond? Is it really going to happen?
It's not going to happen. It will never happen. We keep thinking it might happen. Let's talk about the opening sequence and song.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Nancy Sinatra.
Twice, yeah.
She does a great job with the song.
She does, yeah. So this is a really good Bond theme, I think.
Yeah. I love the theme. Yeah.
It's so my wife was like, "What? Which movie is this?" And I was like, "Wait for it." And then she just started singing the chorus, and she was like, "I don't get it." I was like, "It's You Only Live Twice."
I don't get it.
It's Only You Only Live Twice.
This is the one that Amanda will sometimes sit down and watch a little bit because she loves Japan so much. So,
oh sure,
yeah.
He is when he's walking through.
I mean, that's somebody who loves Japan. If they're like, I'll even watch this.
Yeah. It's a sure sign.
It is fun to see how freakishly tall James Bond seems.
Even when he's hunched over.
I know.
Yeah. Which makes it somehow worse.
And they In the wedding scene, not to jump ahead, but they clearly like rounded up the tallest Asian guys they could find.
Still.
Please, please. Get more of the tall guys in there.
This is it. And I swear there, even the men are wearing those wooden sandals that have the kind of lifts on them too. Mm-hmm. They're really doing all they can to meet him halfway. Now, they can't even do that.
I have a question.
They met him literally halfway.
I have a question, and I'm glad Paul's here to help me with this.
Sure. I like to
help. Is the cut of his suit so different, or is he just put on some weight?
He's put on some weight. Oh,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's what it is?
I know. I was not asked.
It's not like a late 60s cut that is like a little.
No, I think throughout this whole thing, he looks thicker than he did previously. Yes. Okay.
Even in the face.
Yeah, absolutely.
He does.
Yeah, he does. He's much fuller of face.
Yeah.
When his shirt's off, though, he doesn't seem.
Well, he's not like.
I mean, I would kill for that bod.
Sure. And I will.
How old is he in this? He's
50.
No. He's still likely in his 30s. That's the crazy part.
It's what?
Let's see. Hold on. Yeah. Let me check this out.
In my head, everyone in movies from 1920 to 1970 is 45 years old.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've never aged.
So this was 67. And he was born in 30, so he's 37 years old.
Wow.
There we go.
Wow. I should be so lucky. okay, so the burial at sea, I think, is great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Love it.
A lot of mystery as to what's happening, what's in there. I love that the guy has the newspaper next to him and is looking with binoculars to confirm that the man in the newspaper is dead.
There's another Skyfall thing where you see the obituary. And that's taken from the novel. There's very few similarities to the novel in this movie, but one of them is that he's dead and you get to read his obituary. And he gets married, I think, in Japan and goes under a different name.
What do you think of the submarine M's office?
I love it. And I want to know, does Moneypenny go like, okay, we're relocating to a submarine, and she'll go, all right, well, I need to take my two flower paintings. Or does someone who's moving everything just move all their decor as well? Because M's model ship is in there.
Well, it's interesting. I think that I feel like docked near the Thames is the M submarine.
Ready to go.
An M plane at an airfield somewhere where all of these offices are already built, ready to go.
So you think that there are duplicate flower paintings and duplicate model ship?
Yes, I do. Is that a more likely explanation than they brought them?
Probably.
It's much more likely that they said, let's make these places, all of these places, as homey as possible. I want to feel like it's like Barbara Streisand with her dressing room writer.
Yeah.
It's like it has to look exactly the same so that she always feels like.
I didn't know about this, really.
I think it's Barbara Streisand. There's some weird, like it has to be, any dressing room she goes into has to match these specific specifications so she can always feel like. It's the same.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Which, look, hey, I get it. And if I had the power, I would do that.
You would do it?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
I would love it if every hotel room looked the same. Honestly.
Yeah.
To what extent, though, like, are they painting the walls for her?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. For sure.
They're probably putting in false, like, mirror sets or whatever.
But look, also, Barbara Streisand is playing nice places. She's not playing places like we play.
That's true.
She's not playing the Gramercy. I love the Gramercy. It's great. Thanks.
I think that's too much. Come on. What, these nice places presumably have been very well designed, and so they have to take some of that.
Absolutely.
Wow. It'd be better. I think it'd be cheaper just for her to travel with a portable, like, tiny house. That's decorated the way she wants.
Maybe she's doing that by now. Now that tiny houses have become
so proliferated.
We finally cracked the technology of tiny houses.
Trailer technology was what we needed, and it's finally here. There is when she throws the book of instant Japanese at him.
Yeah.
And we get that lovely line of exposition.
Yeah.
You forget I took a firsts in Oriental languages.
Did we need the insert shot of the little Japanese book? Wouldn't it have been enough for her to just hold up a book and say, hey, here's some Japanese for you? And he's like, I already know Japanese. Like, I get why we needed to hear him say, I'm fluent in Japanese.
There is a time when, like, they hadn't discovered certain editing shortcuts and stuff. Because I was watching I Love Lucy last night, and sitting there reading a mystery novel, dipping chips into a cheese dip, and she's at her vanity and her cold cream is right next to it. And they're very clearly labeled, as you might imagine, like a prop master made
them.
And it's a medium shot and you can easily read it and you know what's coming and you're expecting it, but they still cut to a tight insert of it going into the cold cream. And it just doesn't need to happen.
Did the audience go,
oh yeah, oh, yeah, yeah,
great.
Yeah. I've been going on a I Love Lucy kick lately, and watching it just for the audience is reason alone to watch, because when she does something, there are times when the audience isn't laughing, they are screaming. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe the comedy right now. I've never seen comedy like this. And
I feel the same way.
I know I've been revisiting this. I haven't watched probably in 20 years, and it's making me so happy because it's both nostalgic. You've seen them all.
Right.
But a lot of it still holds up, and then there's a lot of oddities where she'll just look to the camera and go, ooh, you know. I don't know. There are so many things going on. I love it.
You love Lucy.
I do.
So he arrives in Japan. And he's immediately being tailed by women with giant speakers in their bags.
Hey, hold on a second. I realize I don't know how his death was faked.
In the sense of...
You mean what part? Like how they got it out to the public?
No. Obviously to the public, they just say, hey, James Bond is dead. Bad news, guys.
Yeah.
But so they... Did the people who were shooting him, did they know they were not killing him? Who were those people?
I think those people, my read on the whole situation is that those people had no idea that they weren't actually killing him.
Right.
And I think that there was some sort of protective metal plate or something in the Murphy bed. And I think that the bullet holes in the wall are just around his
body.
Probably.
We'd have to relook at it. You're probably right. But – yeah, although what's weird is that those bandits you would think would be like
– bandits.
Well, that you'd think they'd be bandits, but they're like military regulars.
Yeah, they're wearing uniforms.
What's the story there?
Yeah.
She's definitely in on it. I think they say that later, but you don't know if those guys are. Yeah.
So those guys, they think they've killed James Bond. Then there's other uniformed guys that come in.
Yes.
2 seconds later. Did they pass each other at all on the porch?
Wait a minute. It's Hong Kong, which would have been under colonial.
British rule,
And they're shooting British guns. So it's a command of like British Army, basically, to shoot James Bond. But they don't – no, they do know it's James Bond because they know he's dying.
Yeah.
Who's commanding this and why are the troops going like, okay, we're going to kill James Bond? Because everybody knows who he is in the movie.
It's a great – well, it's – everyone knows who he is until number 11 is surprised that that was James Bond.
Yeah.
After she says it was in all the papers and it was on the front fucking page with a picture too large for a military commander.
Right.
Right.
It was crazy.
Yeah. So your question was how.
Yeah. What was it? Was it blanks? Was it – how did they explain away? Because I missed it somehow.
It couldn't
how
have been they explained blanks, though, away because his death. They show the bullets hitting.
Right.
And they go through the Murphy bed to the back wall.
Right.
So the only explanation would be some metal plate right where he's lying.
I guess what I'm asking is, does anyone in the movie ever say, here's how we did it?
No.
No.
Okay. Okay.
No. Never.
All right. I thought I was crazy.
No. You missed nothing.
I thought, did I have one of my spells?
No.
You know, I think what we needed for Paul is an insert of the paper that explains the plan.
Yeah. Although that happens to me. Bond movies at times are made for tuning out. You know, usually around the third act is when you get a little fatigue, especially when they're getting heavy into the complicated plot. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Why are they all so long? Because I feel like they're all 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
Some of them are
at least. Yeah. Yeah.
There's and only been a couple that have been under.
And for that time, too, that's insane, you know? And it's always there's a point where you're like, what's happening now? Why is this still happening? Let's get to it.
Yeah, there's a slog.
I mean, there are also like – it does suffer from the lengthy sceneries.
Yes.
And
because that was production value, you're getting your money's worth. And,
no one had been there. And like, Thunderball really mastered that with the fascination of we can shoot underwater. So let's do it.
Please
for
don't.
A good third of the film.
Please don't. Yeah. I feel like that will be our last movie we watch.
Oh, that'd be tough to end on. I kind of want to get it over.
You should have started with that one.
We should have. You're absolutely right.
You really should.
Oh, I can't even.
Well, that's why I pulled a Tomorrow Never Dies. I'm like, let's get this one out of the way. And
I don't understand.
But maybe we'll like Thunderball more now that we've been kind of looking at it. You don't think
we
so?
We won't.
So even when they pull the thing, so he's had some sort of scuba apparatus to enable him to be in the coffin that went into the drink, and then they pull that out and he instantly, instantly wakes up.
Yeah.
Or was he just pretending to be unconscious?
I think he was pretending for the audience's sake. Like he, as Bond, was not, but it was sort of like, let's just have him be still. Maybe we still think he's dead.
I also don't wonder why – I do wonder why he didn't just use the Thunderball thing, which seems to be much more
smaller,
compact and not
– And he's not under there long. Also, he does not go but 10 feet underwater – when the scuba people are picking him up, you can see all the light, and it's like anybody looking overboard would be like, they're stealing our guy.
Well, and that's part of the ceremony.
Were the people at the ceremony in on it, or were they really mourning this guy?
Oh, that's a good question, too.
Did he have relatives there?
Yes. No, it was only a military service. Yeah. Wait. Also, M's not even there.
No.
He's waiting for him on the other end, obviously.
In a submarine.
And Moneypenny. Couldn't be bothered.
Well, you know.
Q?
Nope.
He didn't make it.
The only three people he knows.
I know.
Don't forget Sylvia Trent. She's in two movies.
Slider. Yeah, well, she hasn't been back.
She's in two movies. Oh.
She wasn't there for Goldfinger or Thunderball, so
she
clearly,
was cut out of Goldfinger,
that's
right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe so. So, but a bridge had been burned. But you think Felix Leiter would have come.
Well, I mean, he's busy in Crab Key probably still, tying up loose ends. Okay. This movie.
You did enjoy this movie?
I had a good time, Paul.
Let me take it to something that I love about it, too, and that is the design. The places they go, that corporate building in Japan, Tanaka's lair.
Yes.
That corporate building is beautiful.
Oh, God, I love it. Like, also in Tanaka's, like, what do you call that? What's a bath? What's the bath thing?
Isn't that his house?
Yes, but he has that room that's, what are they called? Ryokans or, but isn't there, onsen bath. He has that one. When they take the baths with the ladies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
Just the way that there's like a rock garden that's elevated off the ground with wood borders and stuff like that. Mm. Oh, man, that's so good looking. But it also made me realize that in many ways, James Bond is my least favorite human because he single-handedly destroys some of the greatest architectural achievements mankind has ever known.
Yeah.
If these things are truly being built in the real world, Bond is blowing all of them up, essentially.
Yeah. I don't know why everything has to be blown up.
Yeah.
Like, they could repurpose some of these structures.
I think I'm catching scene elements like that are being repurposed. Like, when he goes to the bar in that guy's business office, he's in there twice, the night before and then in the morning when he comes in. They open the bar, and there's a black quilted leather pad that looks like exactly the same size as the one in Goldfinger's rumpus room and in his airplane. And I'm wondering,
wow. You're watching these very closely.
I gotta look past the action sometimes.
Maybe that was just a popular style of the day.
Yeah.
I think so, but it does make me realize I watch these films half just visually. Like, that's most of the joy I get from, not most
absolutely.
Of it, but a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's there to be looked at for sure. Yeah. You know, it's like that. I will say the visually, this movie is so much fun to look at. There's a lot of really cool stuff. And I really liked the action sequences.
Yeah.
I liked the fights, you know, I thought were really well done in a way that, I don't know, it's so different. It's not just that there's a lack of music, you know, that gives it an urgency. It's also the way it's cut. It's the way it's shot that you just don't really see much in modern cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, where it feels very – they're like acting the shit out of it. You know, all the fights in this movie, you know, his hand-to-hand fights with people.
Particularly, I think that fight in the office building with that henchman. I think that might be one of the best fights in a James Bond movie.
I agree.
Yes. And
what is the couch
really
made
does,
of?
I know. It feels really kinetic, and it does feel like Connery's phoning it in on his acting in this film, but not the action for some reason.
Yeah.
That fight is great.
Well, isn't this, and I don't know if we touched on it last time we talked about this movie, but isn't this sort of where he reached his breaking point with being James Bond?
Because he was he could not
go anywhere in Japan.
This is the famous story of he went into a bathroom stall and reporters were putting their cameras up over the stall to get a picture of him.
That's nuts.
And Cubby Broccoli had to do a press conference where he berated the Japanese press saying, like, leave him alone. And that's when Connery quit. Yeah, he couldn't take it anymore.
Ugh. I mean, he sticks out like a sore thumb.
He really does.
Even in the scenes when he's walking through the streets, it's crazy.
This film also commits one of the cardinal sins of movies, but is – I'm trying to think of what year this stopped happening, but it basically happens to every older film that does this. Whenever you see – video footage in the movie of a hero having been filmed, it's the footage from the movie that we saw earlier.
That shit drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like when there's photos of people on a TV show, like a crime show, and it's the headshot.
Yes.
You know, it's like, we're looking for this person. It's like, what? No person, no average person just has a picture like that of themselves.
And it also, I mean, the other thing too, like when he's watching the usual reception for the car that's chasing them with the guns. Mm-hmm. When he's watching that on the little camera inside the Toyota, there's apparently another helicopter flying that's above the helicopter to take the images relay back to the Toyota.
Early drone.
We're going to talk more about that fight in a minute, but we do have to talk about Tanaka and that wonderful Toyota.
I love that Toyota.
That car...
The one that Aki drives?
Yes.
Yeah.
That car is just the bee's knees.
It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
And it's a good
car. Didn't one come up for sale recently and it was like...
Yeah, over $1 million. They didn't make very many of them. And that was the only convertible ever made because they tried to put Sean Connery in it and his head would not fit in the car.
Oh, my God.
So they had to cut the roof off.
Is this a Japanese-only car or did they have it in the States?
No.
Oh, wow. What's it called?
How tall is Connor again? 6'3"?
6'3", but again, it's a Toyota sports car. So, I mean, it's like when, you know, a lot of the shorter cars, like the Ford GT famously has those doors that when you open it, part of the roof comes out with the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go to sit in it and you're over 6'3", it will
cut your head off.
So
that's like that crack tip.
It will cut your head off.
Steve
no question.
Bought a Mini Cooper. And was driving a Mini Cooper for years.
Those cars are surprisingly
roomy. They're very roomy. Oh, they are. Yeah.
They really are.
You just have your seats lower than you think in there or something.
The roof's also very tall.
Yes,
from
that's true.
Where the seat is.
All right, so I take it all back.
This is Welcome to Car Talk. I'm Clank.
I think it was. I'm Clark.
I'm not a sound. I don't know much about cars.
I think it was... maybe it was a movie Always. John Goodman worked on some Steven Spielberg film, and then Steven Spielberg gave the cast Miatas as like a gift.
What?
Is it Miatas? No, maybe not Miata. So it's a car that sounds like that. That's like kind of a cool sporty car.
Oh, Maserati, not a Maserati.
No. Not. I feel like it was Miatas.
Those are sporty cars. I'm just. Yeah. That's funny that that's
because I think they were new at the
time.
They
were big. Yeah.
And so John Goodman. John Goodman said, I feel like a bear in a shoe.
That's beautiful. The name of the model is the 2000 GT.
Mm.
Front engine, rear wheel drive, two seat, hardtop coupe Grand Tour.
Mm.
There were 351 of them made.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you find that when Aki and Bond get together, like it is probably one of the most awkward transitions from just agent helping a guy out to suddenly they kiss out of nowhere. It just doesn't feel like they've had any chemistry.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's really – I feel like she got kind of shafted in this movie and she's not given much to do and she's not given much of a chance to show personality, to show – you know, to become a real character. You know what I mean? It was a drag. It was kind of a drag.
Let me ask you this, because originally those Kissy Suzuki, who plays his wife, mm-hmm. that's the character of the wife in Aki, the actresses were switched, and they switched them before they started because I think the one playing Kissy couldn't handle the English very well. And it was
oh,
like,
wow.
There's a dark story about it that she was going to commit suicide. She was so dishonored or something. Like, I should really read up on this, but that's essentially the story. And so they switched roles.
But neither of them really get a chance to become anything more than just, you know, here's this girl that's, you know, you go run over there.
Yeah. And I believe they're both dubbed too anyway. So mm-hmm. you're only getting half their performance.
Yeah. I mean, so much of the dubbing is in the opening credits. The head of dubbing.
Yeah.
Like, gets an opening credit.
And Tiger is so clearly a Western man doing a Japanese.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, he's like, he sounds like Solo from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I suppose it's time to talk about the most British man in this film.
Oh, let's get to it.
I love this scene. He whacks him on the leg with the cane really hard, the fake leg.
That's presumptuous.
He lost it.
That's presumptuous.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point.
It's also, maybe ask.
Or say, I'm going to hit your leg right now.
Do you mind if I – this is just procedure.
But he's living in one of these traditional Japanese – I guess, is that a ryokan? I don't know. Anyway, but he's brought the comforts of the West with him, like a full canopy bed and some antiques. And yet he's still wearing a kimono. Mm-hmm. I just love that mashup.
He also asks that you forgive the mashup of styles.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is the most British thing to say ever.
Right.
I do apologize. His death is great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Because I didn't remember that. It was extremely well – it was fun and cool.
Yeah.
It was really well done.
And that's what I like about this plot is that there's a lot of one thing happening leading to the next. So that happens. He follows that assassin, gets in his clothes, ends up at this place he otherwise never would have. I mean, the way he fools that guy.
He just crashes through that fucking paper wall.
Yeah. But then he ends up at this building – and he wouldn't have otherwise gotten there, you know.
Yeah,
just feels like a spy.
He does some crack spy work here.
Yeah,
he knocks that guy down, takes his terrible shoes, which just is like, all right, you're gonna wear those shoes for two scenes. That's crazy. Yeah,
they're very distracting. I'd forgotten that he took them, and I saw them, and I went, "Is that what he's normally wearing?"
No.
Yeah.
No.
When the fight happens, I didn't really notice the shoes. And I'm like, does he have spats on?
Yeah, he sure does.
Fight spats.
Combat spats.
Spats.
But it's, spats. You know, very quick thinking of him to act injured and to be hunched over to conceal his size. And and then he gets to that building and has what I think is just a terrific fight.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great. It's really good.
It's visceral. It's very it seems to be kinetic in the sense that they're using everything around them for the fight.
Yeah.
With a man who's clearly Samoan and not Japanese.
Yeah. Well, you know, you work with what you have, Matt.
I don't know. You have access to all you need.
Possibly could have found someone.
Yes. Now we have way more Japanese people now than we did then.
That's right. There were 40 Japanese people back then.
Yeah, and they were busy.
Those 40 were already in the film.
That's right.
Most of them were sumo wrestlers.
That's right.
Well, and a lot of them, too, had to be dressed up as ninja commandos, modern-day ninja commandos.
That's right.
That's right.
So this fight, I just – the use of the couch has always been something that's stuck with me. Because the couch has to be light enough to be wielded by both of them, yet hard enough to affect each of them when hit with it.
Right.
Well, it felt like I bought it because it felt like more of a, I'm putting you off balance. I'm keeping you at your distance, you know, as opposed to I'm going to like swing this like a baseball bat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, it's very... It really grabs your attention when it happens. When he picks up that couch and like shoves it at the guy, like, wow.
It's got a precursor to what Jackie Chan and Jason Bourne would do later, which is use the objects around
you. Yeah, absolutely.
You don't get much back then.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so much of that. It's a really good fight. And then at the end when he, after he hits him with that statue and breaks it, and then he very, you know, carefully puts the statue back. And I think gives it like a little pat or something.
He does. It's almost like a thanks, nice working with you statue.
Yeah. I'm curious if these Bond films are the first to really actually make something out of a fight, because prior to this, they're always a means to an end. Like, you just have to vanquish a foe.
Yeah.
In this, they're taking time to, especially Peter Hunt in the editing, is really taking time to make this a moment to sit and watch, especially in From Russia with Love with that train fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If this is the one time I'm going to call out to the listeners to actually tweet at me some fact.
Come on, guys.
Whoa.
If there's a fight that you think proceeds from Russia with Love in that sense, that was really there to be a good fight on film.
Like a set piece.
Yeah.
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 Send it, like a hand-to-hand fight.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Send it to Matt Myra.
Well, wait, no. Oh, Matt, you're soliciting tweets, but for me.
Yes.
The moment he drags the body into the bar area and takes the drink, I just think is so wonderfully James Bond. And I could see Daniel Craig doing that now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a character
Same
trait.
Thing with busting through the paper wall. Like, there are just a lot of these brute force kind of things.
I like that he had to make sure, like, the guy was all tucked in. Oh, kick those feet over there. All right.
Tidy. Leave a place better than you left it.
Okay. What kind of vodka was it that he was so disgusted by?
Yeah, what was
it? Russian? No, not Russian.
No, it wasn't Russian. It was something else.
Was it Japanese?
I feel like it was Chinese or something. What was it? It's
the most disgust he's ever expressed on his face.
It really
also,
is.
Also, there's a million bottles there. Try, you know, how about mix it up? Have a scotch.
Just the fact that it's in there is tainting the whole collection. What do you guys think about Helga Brandt? She passed away like a week or two ago. She plays number 11.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always remember her being – she never quite did it like after what's her name? Fiona Volpe in Thunderball, who I think is so great. And they're kind of similar types. But I liked her more in this one. She's just kind of dour and I don't know.
Wait, is this the red
lady? Yeah, red, yeah.
The red lady?
The red
is
lady.
This the red lady?
Oh,
I thought the red lady was pretty.
You're thinking of The Matrix.
I like red lady.
I want a red lady for myself.
Red lady.
Red lady. She's better than I remember. She's pretty stoic, but I think I remember her. I don't remember her as much. She wasn't as memorable to me, but maybe it's just knowing that she passed away. I have a little.
Well, she's a real trooper for putting up with that first scene.
Trying to remember the.
Where it's like, you know, smoking is not good for your chest, and then he likes a healthy chest and all that stuff.
Oh, right.
It was like that. My mind immediately goes to, you know, they have to light that scene, position the camera, you know, all that stuff. She's got to stand there at least for the first, you know, setup, and then.
All right, we got to turn around. Everyone, take 20.
Yeah, no, lower.
Except
I think
for you,
lower,
red lady.
Lower the camera. Except you, red lady. Second team, except red lady.
Red lady stands in for everyone.
Oh boy,
there's a lot of anti-smoking messages.
I know,
in this movie.
But it also seems like it's leading up because there's twice.
But it's all bad guys.
Yes,
saying
you shouldn't smoke. Even Tanaka says like you shouldn't smoke.
Yeah,
and then yet his cigarette is the Deus Ex Machina that saves the whole day in the end. But it does seem like all of it is intentional, but I don't know what the message is. Like, it is okay to – it's like Roald Dahl saying, everybody complains that I shouldn't be smoking, but look how smoking saves
lives. Exactly,
life. Literally, it saved his life.
Like, fucking Blofeld is like, hey, look, you know, smoking's not great for you. Yeah. I wish you wouldn't, but go ahead.
Guess what's also not great for you?
If you must.
Here's what's not great for the world either. Special executive for extortion, terrorism, and whatever those letters stand for. I can never remember.
Super perjury. Engineers. Crime. Terrific.
And red lady.
Referencing stuff.
Red lady.
Red lady. Energize.
This episode of James Bonding is brought to you by HelloFresh. You know what it is. It's a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers your favorite step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. With HelloFresh, all ingredients are delivered right to your door in recyclable, insulated packaging, and it comes pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. And HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. They include the classic pan, which comes in a wide variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. The veggie plan, which has vegetarian recipes with plant-based proteins. And the family plan. That's quick and easy meals the whole family will love. Better yet, you can choose a delivery day that works best for your busy schedule or even pause your account for weeks at a time. You don't have to spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. There's lots of one-pot recipes for seriously speeding cooking and minimal cleanup. That's right. I said cooking, not cookie. Each week, there's a 20-minute meal on the classic menu for when you really don't have more time than that. And as we know here on James Bonding, you don't have time between all of your secret agenting and preventing of World War II with convoluted plans that you don't have time to understand because, quite frankly, you're busy cooking a 20-minute meal. I've used it. Matt's used it. We both love it. HelloFresh is great. The convenient packaging is out of this world. The delivery day is a huge bonus because I can choose to have it delivered on the day of the week that works for me. And you know what? My wife likes it too because she loves tiny packaging with great labels. She's a big fan of labels. For $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code BONDING30. Just do it. Bonding 30. You'll get $30 off your first week of HelloFresh. So go to HelloFresh.com and type in the promo code Bonding 30. Please. The holidays are coming up. Why not give yourself the gift of Stitcher Premium? They have an incredible Black Friday deal going on that you won't want to miss. You can get 50% off your first payment for a limited time when you go to StitcherPremium.com/Black Friday and use the promo code Black Friday. That's $17.50 for an entire year of Stitcher Premium. You can spend cozy winter nights binging on original comedy series like Matt Besser's Stolen Idea or Amanda Lund's The Complete Woman. Amanda has been a guest a number of times on this podcast. You love her. Matt loves her, so much so that he married her. You can listen to new episodes each week of premium shows like Big Grande's Teacher Lounge, which the AV says mines pure gold from education's underbelly. Plus, with Stitcher Premium, you can get access to exclusive bonus episodes of your favorite podcasts, ad-free archives, and hundreds of stand-up comedy albums, i.e., there will be a live episode of James Bonding that is going to be appearing on Stitcher Premium very soon. We're recording it at the UCB Theater on December 7th, so if you're in L.A., come see that. Otherwise, if you can't be here, you can listen to it. And you can do it on Stitcher Premium. And you can do it for $17.50 for the whole year. Go to StitcherPremium.com/Black Friday. I keep wanting to say Back Friday. It's not, that's not a thing. StitcherPremium.com/Black Friday. And use the promo code Black Friday for 50% off your first payment.
I love set piece gag of him fighting a ton of thugs on the dock all in one giant helicopter shot only to have him blackjacked in the end.
That was worth it because I laughed out loud when there was that crazy wide shot of him just running on the roof. Yeah. Like, what's happening?
And he's just so loud.
Exactly. Hey, guys, let's get some laps in.
But the best part is watching the thugs who are probably going, I'm in a James Bond movie, giving it their all. Yes. And they can't run at full speed because they'll catch up to him too soon. So they're kind of doing like a energetic body but slow movement double take.
It's the Equalizer run.
What's that?
From the television show The Equalizer? Yes. Edward Woodward, yes, The Equalizer.
I was trying to think of it.
Who was an older actor.
It really is. I thought this was some like dance or like exercise thing.
Dance!
Like do the Equalizer run where you use all the energy twice or half the speed.
Because he was older, when he would chase after the criminals, the actors portraying the criminals were always told they had to run in a way that looked like they were hauling ass, but really practically running in place.
How do you do it?
I'll try to demonstrate.
Okay, hold on.
Because it was demonstrated for me.
Take some video of this.
All right.
This is important. Okay.
So the Equalizer is chasing me. All right. So here we go. And you just slowly move forward, right? And then this old man is running at top speed.
The Equalizer run.
The Equalizer run.
Yeah, they all, and also I wonder how many times they had to do that. Like if they got three or four helicopter sweeps with that scene. I think of it, I'm like, that's exhausting. I don't want to do that.
But there's no clues in it. It's either Connery is so disenchanted that that's the first take and that's all you're going to get from him, or what you're seeing is the fifth take.
My favorite move in that whole fight is him throwing a stick at four people and them really being taken aback by that stick.
Right.
That's what nearly gets him away.
Yeah. He really
I got
does.
A stick. Because you think you're going to see some amazing hand-to-hand combat.
No.
Some sort of, you know, Robin Hood type, you know, staff battle. And then he's like, he runs in a door.
And the music when he jumps into those mattresses, too, is a beep.
Also, what? Why is no one following him? They clearly see that this works.
There's many things wrong with this. Yes. The decision to land on your back on an unknown surface, I'm going to assume that's
isn't that the safest way to do it, though?
No.
If you know what stuff is, sure. If what you know that it's a pad, you know what I mean, that you're going to land on, which it was, then sure. Okay. But if you're jumping on just some crates, how do you know if it's soft?
Like bags of wheat or something like that.
Yeah, but they're not. You don't know that.
The second one for sure was boxes. Yeah. And all I could think was, how do you know what's in those boxes?
Yeah, it could be like shipped ninja stars. Because we know they're using
it. It could be shipped ninja stars.
It's a common thing to come out of that port.
Yeah. Well, they're using them in hordes there.
But they like the first box he goes down and they just watch him like, well, that's that.
Yeah.
And then the second one, he really takes his time where he's like, oh, that was smart. Okay, there's another one. All right.
Not a one of them decides to follow the man who clearly landed on soft happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he really blazed the trail.
They were shipping mattress components.
The Japanese pillow industry.
The hollow pillow. I also noticed something else, and I think this is an official Gloft. Mm-hmm, Gorley, look out for this. Helga Brandt is wearing an engagement and wedding ring.
Oh, so she's off the market.
Yeah, but she's sleeping with Bond. Who's her husband? It's not the business guy, right? Like, they're not married. What was his name?
Sato? Oh, no. That's the bad guy from Karate Kid 3. Sato.
You're right. I should have known that.
Karate Kid 3.
Sato.
What is his name?
Osaka. Isn't it like
Osato?
Osato? Osato. Is it
so I was definitely Ron? Close. Ron?
Yeah. Ron.
White man? What hold on. I don't know why this is.
Here, I'll look it up too.
Everyone, take a moment. Get your phones out.
Sam sent me Equalizer Run on my phone. I'm doing a good job.
It's Osato.
I hope people will appreciate this when they see it.
Is she married to Osato?
Thank you, Sam.
Is she Mrs.
Osato? Is she
Osato?
Married to Osato? I didn't get that. I thought that he was just her.
Is she 11
special? That's a number 11. Yeah. She 11 is Osato or an item? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I don't know.
11 Osato. Are there any calls for me?
But I just want to know who is she has a husband, which just feels like, does she go home to him at the end of the day and like, I'm here
took him dinner, right?
Yeah.
My guess
clean
is.
Clean the house.
Sure. If it makes it better for us, yes.
Is he in crime or does she keep it from him?
Oh, the husband. Yeah. If it's not Osato.
Yeah. Right.
Does he know?
It can't be Osato because he treats her just like a secretary and kills her. I mean, it could be.
Wait, you're not putting that past this movie for you to treat your wife like a secretary in the 60s?
I think the real bad guy here is whoever was in charge of the wardrobe department and did not tell that actress to take her rings off.
Yeah, but also gave her like a Batgirl cowl when she jumps out of the airplane. Did you notice that? Her goggles have like a head.
I love the way she slowly backs off the wing.
It's like, again, like this crazily elaborate, like it's a parody at this point,
you know, completely.
But it's like, why did that ever have to be the way to do this?
This movie has the biggest egregious example of that and one that I actually thinks works very well. When he got into that plane with her, did he not go like, why do you have a full parachute on? We're just going in a little. And why don't I?
It's a great question. But it's a great question.
I will say that I think that the poison down the thread is an actually a great spy assassin.
Yes,
sense.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. Yes.
And that one is not elaborate. You could see it. It makes sense. It doesn't rely on crazy circumstances. It's effective. It's stealthy. I love that one.
What's so fun about these movies is the arbitrary decision to be stealthy or not stealthy.
Yes, yes.
Like why?
Yes.
Why? Who? What tracks are they covering with the poison thread? Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, is there going to be some formal inquest into this guy's death?
And
like,
hadn't they already
just had a heart attack during the night
to kill him in the ninja training grounds? Was that before or after?
That was
before.
Before,
yeah, because he wasn't Japanese yet. He was Japanese That's by the right. time of the poison thread, right?
And boy, was he Japanese.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about that.
Well, should we?
We should talk about Tiger Tanaka.
Yeah.
We should talk about his M train. Mm-hmm. He's got a train, which he then says, I assume your M has a similar arrangement, to which Bond feels that he can't say that he doesn't. So he says, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to embarrass his boss.
Exactly.
But, you know, I love the efficiency with which the Japanese Secret Service is operating here.
Yeah.
I love how quickly that image is blown up. Mm-hmm. I love how...
Right. Oh, also, he starts it by saying, we have this, we blew this up, we could see this writing here. And then everything else is like, they didn't think to look any more closely at the picture. James Bond's like, what's that over there? Oh, blow that up. There's like five different details that they were just like, man, that's all we have. Well, how about this? Oh, whoa. Hey, he's right.
Should we check on that ship? I think we should check on that ship. It's got a name and a registry. We should check on it.
No. No, Bonson.
And I also love the negative having on it the fact that it was who took the picture, that they were killed as a precaution.
Wait, I'm spacing on this.
Is written as like a fucking watermark on the negative.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
When they took it to the drugstore to have it developed. Yeah.
Make sure they write this. Also, kill the drugstore developer. We'll take it to a different drugstore.
Put that on there. Yeah.
I do enjoy the train.
The train's great. Though.
I love all the little nods to Japanese efficiency, like when Bond shows up and he's told he's 3 minutes early.
Oh yes,
for the appointment.
Yes, you're 3.5 minutes early.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love the X-ray chair in Osato's office.
Yeah,
it's all of these touches.
That office is great.
Yeah,
it was hilarious to me how far apart they were sitting.
Like it when had Bond, because he doesn't want to get radiated by the X-ray machine.
Yeah, exactly. Bond is sitting in that chair. He's so far away, so far away. But I loved that reflective surface, you know, where you can see Sean Connery in the reflection.
Yeah.
That was a great shot.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that is, there's a lot of that in this movie that is the really nice touches like that.
And this is Lewis Gilbert's first Bond film too, so... He's I don't know what else he did before and after much, but he really nailed it for the one similar formula. He did three Bond films that are pretty much the same story.
So this and which other ones?
Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker. And they all begin with a vehicle or vessel being stolen. And they all end in a similar way where Bond is joined by an army of some kind to fight another army of some kind in a giant lair or in that. NK space.
And people just indiscriminately throwing grenades.
Yes.
Yes.
No shit.
We have not had a James Bond movie in quite a while where an army joins him in his fight.
Yeah. I think, is this the first one since we restarted?
The closest we have to it is the Marines showing up in GoldenEye at the very end, but he's already dispatched everyone.
Yeah, that quite doesn't count, yeah.
But it is an army willing to help.
That's true. Let's talk about Little Nelly.
Let's talk about Little Nelly and her father.
That's right.
I love his, make sure Little Nelly brings her father. Repeat, Little Nelly.
She acquitted herself quite honorably. I don't know why I'm doing
That's a toy, Bond. You can't possibly ride this toy. Use my helicopter.
I'm going to put Q's hands at a GoldenEye -2.
I thought these were actually a GoldenEye -3.
Possibly. Let's say
they 2. Seem 5. A bit smaller.
Do you know about this?
No, he doesn't know about this ridiculous enormous. Thing.
No. Desmond Llewellyn's hands are enormous, and I first noticed this on our first film, GoldenEye, so we're ranking that as the baseline. They swell throughout the years. But this one, you see his forearms.
Well, they say your hand, it's like your nose, your ears, and your hands never stop growing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, his nose and ears are fine, but his hands is doing all the work.
It is.
His forearms are giant. Yeah. They're like gorilla forearms.
I did not notice.
He picks up a 12-inch sub in GoldenEye. And that's really where it's super noticeable. Because
does he really?
Yes, he does. Because it's the button on the scene. It's the blow to the comedic blow to the cue scene is James Bond asking what this does, and he grabs it and says, "Don't touch this. That's my lunch."
And it looks like an Olive Garden breadstick in his hand.
It does. It looks so small.
Yeah,
but it's quite a large sandwich.
Yeah.
What's unfunnier, that joke?
Uh huh.
Or the joke that James Bond is making.
Ooh, yeah.
Like in real life. In real life, right? So this secret agent points at this sandwich and goes, "What's that do?"
And he does that every time, basically.
His joke.
What's it going to be?
That's a beautiful question. I think the unfunnier thing is the secret agent doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You passed my test.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul.
Then I'll answer that as well.
Mm. Okay. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to do it.
No. I'm saying the same answer.
Well, say it, though.
The secret agent doing that joke.
You have passed my test.
I hope so.
If you at home have passed Paul's test, please tweet Matt
Did you
Gourley.
Pass the test? We want to hear from you. Get out your phones. Text us 1 for yes, 2 for 1.
Also, draw a pirate, turtle, or other thing to see if you have the skills to be an artist.
The pirate is the hardest.
Is this the only James Bond movie with time-lapse photography where they show Little Nelly just being assembled on its own?
That's not time-lapse. That's more of a time cut.
Okay, yeah.
But yes, I think it is.
Yeah.
It is kind of fun.
It is fun.
Say you
it's
don't
different.
Know what you're watching it for the first time. You have no idea Little Nelly's this tiny personal helicopter with a bunch of machine guns.
I love that it comes in like alligator skin.
Oh, with travel stamps on it. Like Hugh has to tell everyone where he's been with this.
And a man per case, all dressed in this kind of, you know, we're out in the East, so we get to wear shorts kind of thing. And chukka boots.
I adore Desmond Llewellyn in this. He really is just, and when he's going through the paces and he's talking about how it fires heat-seeking Stinger missiles at a rate of 60 per minute when there's clearly 2 on the helicopter. He's just like, man, if we had the space, we'd fire 60.
Well,
60 per minute. It's insane. Little Nelly is one of those Bond gadgets that is much like the jetpack, a practical thing that existed in life.
Or the jet in Octopussy.
Yeah, or the jet in Octopussy that is used in a James Bond movie.
I can't believe they haven't used one of those ridiculous water cannon jetpacks, you know, like Leonardo DiCaprio floats around
in. You can't. he's your poster boy for the water powered jet.
To me, it will always be that news blooper.
Of course.
Guy, like the big buildup, take it away, and then he just instantly falls into the water.
Yeah,
that's right.
And until the early part of this century, I always associated crushing wine with your feet as Lucy and Vivian Vance. However, now it's been overtaken by the news lady.
I might have to revisit these.
You'll be glad you did. You'll be glad you did.
You'll be glad you did.
In this world, take the joy where you can.
I got another gloft when they showed the Russian rocket taking off.
Yeah.
It's clearly America because they've got palm trees and a road sign down low that says slippery when wet.
Oh, hilarious.
I did not notice that.
Hilarious.
That is a great gloft.
Yeah.
The missile hits a bald eagle.
Also, I have to say, this whole re-entry of this spacecraft landing in the volcano, so far beyond any technology until very recently with these SpaceX.
They're only now just figuring that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I have to say, again, as a fan of early space travel, there is no way that this rocket has enough fuel in the staging that it has. It's right. just, but no one knew that. Why am I complaining? No one cares.
It's all right.
No one cared then.
I went to this castle, Himeji Castle, when I was in Japan, and Amanda like humored me because she's, well, let's go see this thing. It's in the James Bond movie. We'll take a picture. It was the hottest day. It was so hot.
On record?
Yeah.
Love saying that.
For me in Japan for that week, it was the hottest day on record. And we walked this long walk to get there, and we got there, and we bought tickets for whatever, like the grand tour, like see it all.
Yeah.
We got in the gates, huge line to get up in this thing, and we went, let's get out of here. We went out front, took the best possible picture we could to connect with one of the scenes from You Only Live Twice, but that's it. I never saw the inside.
You know,
you should have gone to Howl's Moving Castle like I told you to. Why would you go to a castle that's just sitting there?
Cagliostro Castle. Lupin.
I do. I am endlessly fascinated by, for some reason, locations that were in
movies. I am too, yeah.
Like, it's still...
Even the inane. Like, I want to know where the street is where those two little women with the speakers in their purse, the microphones in their purse are.
Yeah.
And how that's changed.
You know, there's a great... I'll plug it. I saw it on... I had seen it as on a Reddit post, and I think you could find it pretty easily on YouTube. There's a travel video a guy did of Tokyo at night, and it is – he doesn't talk. He's simply shooting it with a beautiful camera. It's Tokyo at night, and he's walking through – you're just walking through Tokyo, and I have never – felt more like I was in a place than when I watched this video.
Current day Tokyo?
Yes.
Oh,
wow.
And it's like,
I'd like to see that.
He's like walking through and he'll poke his camera in one of the small sushi stands or one of the small ramen stands, and he just, it's beautiful. Hmm. And I highly recommend it. I'll find it and I will tweet out the link.
Great.
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 Agreed.
Kids, you're going to go to Japan from your computer.
When he does show up at Himeji Castle and he sees Tanaka again and Aki, and they've already spent the night together.
Mm. They sure have,
And man. He gives her such a cursory douche nod, like just, you know, she's kind of looking at him with a smile, and he just, tiger, and then looks at her and kind of just does a, you know, like a barely any.
Yeah, I remember. I fucked you.
Yeah. I just felt like, even out of character for Bond, it was too much. Yeah. You know, give the girl some acknowledgement that he shared some intimacy. Really having trouble with my words
all the
most
intimacy.
Days, but especially today. This is the first day we've been able to record in a, like the AM
on a Saturday.
Hours.
It's unbelievable.
And here I am not feeling like my brain's working.
We're going
to
get there.
I'm just not used to it.
Next week for the final Paul and Paul Vember. Have we talked to Shear yet? We got to call a Paul.
Yeah.
We need a Paul.
There's got to be another Paul.
Paul, do you know any other Pauls?
Oh, I know all of them.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Let's get Paul Gleason. Paul. Who are the other famous Pauls?
Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
Who are the other famous Pauls?
Paul McCartney.
Sure.
We'll get McCartney.
Good one. Yeah, he'd be a good guest.
Well, he's involved. He did the theme song to We'll Do Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die, he did.
Yeah.
I did. It was cool. It was really cool.
It was fun, right?
We had a great time.
I can't do anything right today. I am having such a struggle this morning.
I thought we were going to just hit it out of the park with you today.
I just am under the weather.
We totally had a great time. Oh, we had a great time, man. Paul McCartney.
God.
Fab Foe is playing tonight at the Wiltern. Jimmy Vivino's Beatles cover band, which is phenomenal.
Jimmy Vivino.
From the Conan O'Brien band.
Oh, right. Yeah. So who does he play?
Well, it's not a Beatles impersonation band.
Yeah,
it's a cover band.
So take it easy. Okay.
It's a cover band.
I'm sorry.
But they play everything in-house as it's recorded live. So, you know, everything from, you know, if there's a sitar in the song, that'll be on stage at the same time
same time as what?
The same time as the rest of the music is being played.
That's usually how it's done.
So, for instance, let's say
am I not understanding what you're saying, or are you saying
he's saying because
in a weird way?
They would have overdubbed in the studio, but
they're doing it live.
Right. Which in a live show, I would hope they would do it at the same time.
Because when you go see like a Rain or a 1964 The Tribute, for instance, these are all Beatles impersonation bands. When you go see one of those.
Wait, one of them is called 1964 The Tribute?
Yes, because they do the Ed Sullivan set, essentially, and then they'll go in and do the rest of it. That's why they're called that. Guys, the point is,
it starts with a reenactment of the Kennedy assassination.
Just to set where America was at that point. And we were ready to embrace something.
That's right.
And now we're going to cut to a scene in Vietnam where American advisors are going through the Mekong Delta.
Welcome to the best exotic marigold hotel. I am Paul McCartney.
I can't do anything right today.
Should you need anything?
Oh, my God. Ask me to do an impression right now. Let's see how it comes
out. Well, let's see if maybe you could go away and Ian Fleming could drop in.
I don't even have faith in that, but let's see what happens. I do have to pee.
Walter PPK.
Hollyo.
Hollyo.
Hollyo. I'm Ian Fleming.
No, it's not
no.
there.
Hollyo. I say, whatever, there he goes. He's got it now, old boy, fireworks and all that. Crackle, crackle. Do you watch the network Crackle for Robotech reruns? Do you, Sam? Sam?
Wait. Ian.
Sam. Yes.
Is that what you're doing?
My favorite networks are Crackle.
Yeah.
Verve. Oh, poor CISO. True TV. Uh-huh. I love impractical jokers. Don't you know? I love it. But I must be going.
Well, take care.
Bye. Well, I'm back.
Oh, no. Christ. He can't get it back.
Christ. Rough morning, rough morning. Let's go back to my notes.
All right.
Oh, I got one. Bond's outfit at one point when he's at Himeji Castle is a pink button-up, like Oxford shirt, business slacks, and like Birkenstock sandals. Did you notice this?
No.
Yeah. Open-toed, barefoot Birkenstock sandals.
Ooh,
that's the worst kind.
Yeah, pretty good.
Do you think we'll ever see James Bond in Crocs?
God, no. Unless he has to be a chef. For some sort of mission.
We've seen him in a crocodile.
Yes, we have.
That's the closest we'll get.
We've seen him on an alligator.
Yeah. That's we've right. seen him in alligator shoes.
Can I just say, on the subject of Crocs, I bought a pair of Crocs to complete a Cake Boss costume. Crocs are extremely comfortable.
There had to be something to them, right?
It was crazy. I put them on. They just feel good.
It's like an air cushion, right?
Yeah, it's really weird.
Do yours have heels that are covered on both sides, or are they kind of open heeled?
I think they're open.
Those I have trouble with. I wonder if these are form-fitting enough because I have some slippers that are
They do have, if I'm wrong, Paul, your Crocs.
No, I will.
Your Crocs may have a strap that goes back,
yes,
the back of the
strap.
Heel.
Yes, there's a strap. There's a strap, yes.
I can't do open-heeled things. They fall off. I kick them off. Like when I walk, they fly off my feet.
No, I think with the strap, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. I don't like any shoe like that. I don't like flip-flops. I don't like slide sandals, you know what I mean? Because I feel like it's all about trying to keep them on my feet.
Yeah, I don't want to have to flex my foot to keep footwear on.
I don't want to flex my foot!
I don't
want to
do it anymore.
I'm tired of it! I will not flex my foot!
Paul McCartney?
Hello! How do you do? Thumbs up!
My wife Linda wrote the reggae part of Live and Let Die.
Oh, that's why it's not as good.
It is good.
The like reggae part, the reggae breakdown.
Paul. It fits in Paul. With the movie. I love that song. I love that song.
It's one of the best.
I never
it's
thought
the
about
best.
That. It does. Jamaican. Yeah. Right.
But are they in Jamaica?
Yeah. They sure as fuck are.
Oh, that's Jamaica.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. You've changed my opinion on this song. I've held for 30 some odd years.
I did it.
No, I think it's the second best. Nobody does it better is my favorite.
You only live twice, guys. Come on.
That's your interesting. Anyway, when it becomes Japanese, what a bunch of bullshit.
It is time to talk about that.
Yes. I remembered that he undergoes this procedure, but I forgot what was involved, which is a bunch of women standing around their underwear.
Mm-hmm. Naturally. Surgical underwear.
But are they actually performing? Are we supposed to believe they're performing a surgery on him? Or are we supposed to believe, because there's a wig there.
Not a surgery, a makeup.
It seems to be just a makeup situation, but he's on a surgical table.
Yes. It's the whole idea, like, why did he need, he needs to be lying down because they're going to put makeup on him, but he doesn't look, he doesn't look any different.
Is he asleep?
No.
For some reason, I'm picturing him
anesthetized. No, he makes a joke.
That's right.
What he makes a joke.
We just cover the parts that don't show the show. Just cover the parts that show.
Oh, right.
Why don't you just cover the parts that show?
They somehow managed to make him less Japanese as a Japanese person.
Yeah.
Or more like, he looks more like Frank Langella. Like middle-aged Frank Langella.
He does. He does. I will say, though, that I think his Japanese wig is better than his American toupee. American. British toupee. Sorry.
He can swim in it?
Yeah. It's
it
really.
It won't come off.
They do a great job with that.
But his this posture he strikes, he just looks not only older than his Japanese bride, but he truly looks like her father. Like he's walking around her and looks like...
Yeah, yeah. He looks infirm.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And also he's so listless. You can tell it's hot because everyone's sweating in these scenes.
Yeah.
And he's just so tired. This is when the energy of the film gets sucked out for me and then I lose it a little bit.
Yeah, and it does sort of stay at that level. I think from the point of him arriving on that island to the point of... Him breaking the astronauts out of the volcano lair. That section of the movie,
it drags.
I wish they could just lift it and put a title card.
Oh, there's so much. It's just not justified.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that. They really the whole wedding, all of that stuff. The idea that he has to get married.
Right.
All of that they could have lifted out.
That's why I wonder if they're just putting that in there for some reason for the first time ever, having some loyalty to the book because he just retires in Japan for a while in this book.
Well, it's because it's in the book. It's because it's production value. You know, you're seeing this ceremony.
Yeah.
It's another girl that they're getting in there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like it's a bunch of things that are not necessary at all.
Yeah.
And but his prosthetic eyelids go away.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
Because at one point, after he doesn't have the wig anymore, I'm like, wait, does he still have the eyes or no? No, I guess he doesn't. I guess they're just gone.
Yeah,
and they're gone after that makeup scene. They're never there. They're not there for the wedding or anything like that. He doesn't have them on.
Aren't they there a little bit for the wedding?
No, I think they're there a little bit for the wedding.
I don't know. But when
he notices doors that I don't notice. So I'm going to have to say Matt might be right here.
I could be wrong, though. When he kneels down and you first see the Japanese priest – What would it be? Say his first little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Connery gives this look like such like Western racism where he just kind of rolls his eyes like, here we go.
But is
this gobbledygook language.
Is he not prepping himself for the pig face?
No, this is after the pig face.
Oh, it's post
pig
face.
This is post pig face. He's there with pig face.
Because first he's standing there and he really looks hungover.
Yeah.
Like where he's when it's the fake out of the women, the parade of bridesmaids or whatever, and then he sees her. And then, so then it's the beginning of the marriage ceremony where, boy, oh boy.
I did want to very briefly touch on one thing in the plane scene with Helga Brandt. The structure of the plane is such that wood has nowhere to be hiding.
It would have been outside.
The wood is hanging outside of the plane. Yeah.
That's like an R2-D2 in some of those prequel ships is just his head sticking out and it's in a wing this thick.
And also, that's the thing?
That's the mechanism. Like, also, wood?
It's not like clamps on his wrist or something or metal.
Yeah.
It's just like a weird cutting board.
It's
a writing desk.
It's just like a sheet of pine.
We're done with that cheese tray. Now it's time for you to be trapped.
Maybe that's what it normally is.
That
would be justified.
Is it normally a cheese tray?
That would be justified.
I'd eat a cheese tray right now.
I'd love to have a flying cheese plate.
I'd
love it.
It's the best kind.
Retractable cheese plate? That's the next thing.
With a brie and maybe a sharp cheddar?
If that came out of a wall.
Retractable cheese plate, you're bringing me down.
Why you gotta do me so wrong?
Not gonna eat any of the dates.
I'd put one of those in my house. You know what I also want? Is a little monorail just to go around the property.
That monorail is the shoddiest.
I'm talking about the Blofeld monorail.
The Blofeld monorail is so shoddy.
It's really adorable. At the end when he goes to, he knows where that rock is. Open up the rock. And it's like just shaking all around. Oh, it's so funny. It shudders to a stop.
And essentially, it looks like it's always on, and he's lifting the brake off of it.
That's why I want one at, like, you know, imagine just a neighborhood suburban house, but one that goes around the perimeter that you would not need. You could sooner walk across it quicker than being in those. Yeah. Just to have one of those.
It is when Connery is going to hide in it. I feared for it toppling over.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem super stable.
I just don't. The other thing I love in this is the astronauts, the conversation the astronauts are having when he's about to bust them out.
Yeah, what are they talking about?
You know, we're called cosmonauts in our country.
I didn't catch they that. Were just getting around.
They were like
just getting around.
Just sharing war stories right about being astronauts.
The line right before that is like, "I wish you'd stop calling me astronaut."
Yeah,
like I've been putting it up with it for 3 weeks. I'm tired. I'm fucking sick of it.
How you doing over there, fellow astronauts?
Also, why wouldn't they already know
their names? Yeah. Why wouldn't they have just been calling each other by their names?
They would absolutely know who each other were.
Oh, my God.
For sure. There's not like so many people in space.
I know. Yeah, they were celebrities at that
point. I was like, who are you again?
Yeah.
Oh, you're also a space guy.
This is crazy.
Oh, yeah, me too. Oh, what a coincidence.
You were orbiting the Earth at a high rate of speed.
Oh, yeah, I'm Buzz Aldrin. Hi. Oh, it's you. Oh, shit. I'm sorry. God.
I mean, you know, those Gemini capsules were like, it was like Buzz Aldrin and Jim Lovell were in one mission together. Yeah. And like Ed White and Gus Grissom, like all these super famous Cover of Life magazine astronauts. Yeah.
And hey, Buzz, get a load of that. It's a real comet streaking through the sky.
I wish they would have caught one that just had a dog or a chimpanzee in it, too. That
capture a monkey.
And Bond had to bust him out, and like he would run along with him in the
battle. Also, the other delightful thing about it, so Bond spy movie, is that he busts open the door with an explosion, and then he stands back while the correct number of bad guys enters the room, so they each get one.
Oh yeah,
yes,
they each get one to knock out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very important.
I know that in these movies, it's like you suspend your disbelief for certain things, matters of convenience or whatever. But when he changes into the human fly thing. to go into the volcano.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's not even carrying a bag.
That's what when I saw him do that, I thought I must have missed something.
No, it comes from absolutely nowhere. He's like, go tell the other men that I need help down here. And then so we see her running away. Then it comes back to putting the outfit on.
Yeah.
Like that absolutely came from nowhere.
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Go back to Tanaka. Tell him to bring everyone you got.
Yeah. Is that a cut scene?
I don't know, because he's up there in his casual disguise clothes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. His fisherman outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, by the way, delighted by how real that fake metal water looked.
It looks great.
Yeah.
This set is.
It's great.
It's incredible. It's great. I also noticed something for the first time. There is an old-timey red farmer tractor right in the middle of it that pulls a little cart, but it's just a bright red. You know the old tractors that weren't huge, but they have the big back tires and then the little engine up front, but you sit on that little saddle seat.
Yeah.
It's just one of those parked in there for no reason. It seems so out of place because it's so quaint.
Explosion of this place when it finally goes up.
Completely unnecessary.
when this beautiful architecture marvel is blown up.
Waste of real estate.
It does blow up and then lava's pouring out of it, right? Like
well,
it makes
I think it,
this volcano
I think it
active
sets off
again.
The volcano.
They managed to keep the volcano at bay with the construction of this gigantic base.
It is.
Well, they sacrifice people to the
piranha. Before we get to the explosion.
Glowing piranha, by the way.
Before we get to the explosion, I do want to talk about Donald Pleasance.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that this makeup is great.
Yeah, it is.
It's really, really good.
For sure.
And I like him. I like him.
Yeah, he's terrific.
He's doing a great job. And, the cat, there's so many fucking shots of this cat.
When, what's her name, gets eaten by the piranhas. And they have an instant of him petting the cat. And he's just petting the cat faster. Like,
He does. His mood reflects on how he pets the cat. It happens later, too. I want to know the story of this actual cat. And I think we may have talked about this before, but was it a pet or was it like just one of those
stage
movie cats that lives in a cage its whole life? Was it one cat? Was it more than one cat? There's the famous picture GIF of it, and you see it in the movie when it's freaking out, and Donald Pleasance is like basically.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I'll look at it.
I haven't
show
seen
you.
That.
Oh, it's towards
to,
the very.
He's
end.
Trying to wrangle that cat, and it is not going well. Like, I guarantee Donald Pleasance's skin was broken by this cat. It is. This is the movie that introduces all of the tropes of James Bond, as far as your volcano lairs and your flesh eating fish danger, your go away bridges that will that are not stable to begin with.
Ugh.
This is the GIF.
Paul's reacting.
That cat doesn't look real.
I know it looks
it looks like an insane puppet.
Well, it looks. Traumatized and abused, and not just in this moment.
Doesn't look happy.
No,
that's,
no.
True. That's true.
Yeah.
Wait. What?
We're talking about the tropes, the bridge.
Yes.
Which is so flimsy. Like, I feel like in the movie they should have used two bridges. They should have used one for the scene where they're dropping the thing.
Oh, the bridge over the piranhas.
The bridge over the piranhas, because it is so when they are running across it, it is so bouncy.
Yeah, yeah.
When she gets.
Nails her head.
She hits so hard.
What? Oh, I didn't notice that.
She lands so hard on her ass, and it looks like, oh, did she break her back?
Yeah.
Like, does she have permanent spine damage?
And it looks like a clear concussion.
It's a hard hit.
It looks like a clear concussion.
Yeah, she hits hard on her ass and then her head on the back of the thing, and then she slides into the water. It's really, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's a hard hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof.
It's another pretty good fight with, what's that guy's name? Who's the henchman? Does he have a name?
Oh, yeah, the big blonde dude.
Yeah.
And he never speaks, right?
No.
No.
I feel like it's like Hans. I think it's literally Hans.
Is it
his
sounds
name.
About right?
Same as the guy from Tomorrow Never Dies? Isn't his name Hans? Oh, no, his name is
Hans.
I'm going to look here.
What is
his name is in here. Yeah, it's Hans. Ronald Rich played Hans.
Then what's the other guy's name? His name is like Lek. Oh, what's it matter?
Hanlek.
He is 6'8".
What? Too tall.
Yeah.
Jeez. What's that guy's name in Tomorrow Never Dies? It's going to drive me crazy.
I don't need this information
in my head.
Wait, Tomorrow Never Dies is Stomper.
Stomper, yeah.
Stomper?
Stomper.
Stomper.
The beginning of that fight is not great because James Bond just walks up to the guy and gets punched in the face.
Yeah. Seems also like
what was that opening choice. Gambit?
I would love a supercut.
Let's see how hard this guy can hit.
I'm asking for a supercut.
All right, listeners. Now I know what I'm dealing with.
I would love a supercut of James Bond furiously punching henchmen and the look of him realizing it has had no effect.
Yeah.
Indiana so if you can Jones collect too. That for me,
yeah.
I would appreciate it. Yeah. We'll send you a signed poster.
Yeah.
If you're the first to make that. I love this now that we have things to offer.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Pretty soon, look in the merch store, podswag.com/bond. There will be signed James Bonding posters done by the wonderful Kyle Steed. The artwork is fantastic.
It's the most beautiful thing ever. And I noticed.
Good call to action.
I noticed on the poster, which I had not noticed until I was signing them this morning, that he correctly put my watch on my right hand.
I wear my watch on my right hand too when I wear a watch.
I'm a lefty, so I wear it on the opposite hand of most people.
I'm a righty.
You're just a weirdo.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to do that.
But why?
Why are you not?
Yeah, I've never quite
I don't know why. It just naturally my inclination was to put it on this hand.
I still don't understand.
I think
that.
It's so you can have your dominant hand free to do things and also check the time.
Oh, I see.
Correct me if
that's
I'm wrong.
That's the first time it's ever made sense to me.
Yeah. Paul wears his on his correct.
I wear mine on my correct all the way around.
He is on his correct.
It goes over here and topwise. And then I look at it and I say, uh-huh.
You always agree with the time?
Yep.
You never disagree?
Here's the thing. I'm always guessing what time it is.
And you're always
I look
right.
at my watch for confirmation. I'm always right.
Uh-huh. Is it a give or take 30 seconds or are you just spot on every
spot on! Japanese efficiency.
Paul F. Tompkins is right about the time 247,000 times a day.
Okay, so let's now, I feel like now we can really just dig into Pleasance's performance. I think they play him without being seen until he asks Hans to move over so he can see.
But it implies the whole time he's not been in the movie as someone's been in his way.
Yeah.
Unintentionally.
Yeah. He's been there the whole time. We haven't seen him.
Are we going to get my close-up?
Could you move? You made a fatal error.
You only live twice, Mr. Bond.
You brought your air conditioning unit into the space capsule.
I do love Donald Pleasence in almost everything I've seen him in.
Because
he starts legit. He's in this, The Great Escape, and he gets really campy in Halloween and stuff, but he's just great. And then the other Carpenter movies like Escape from New York and what's the church one?
Escape from Church?
That's my life.
right?
Poignant.
What is it? Prince of Darkness.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, which I've never seen.
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to the Carpenter performance when
he
was playing?
No, but I did go to a screening of that movie at that church in downtown L.A. They showed the movie at that church, yeah. Shout out to Jay Cheel, friend who made it happen.
Get your shout outs.
Shout out.
Guys, I don't want to be a party pooper.
Yeah. No, you must.
But my time is drawing short.
No, I think it's time to wrap this
beautifully,
up.
Beautifully, we are near
We have
the
two
end of
things
the film.
We got to do to wrap it up, and that
I
is...
Cut this part out where I said that so I don't look like a jerk.
You know what? We're not going to. We're going to let everyone know...
Fair enough!
we have to get going too, Paul.
What would you rate this on a 0 to a 007? 007 being the best...
That's how we rate the James Bond films.
And then Matt will grace us with his choice for next movie.
I'm going to give this a 002.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just for interest, what would you give Live and Let Die and Dr. No since we've done those on here before?
Live and Let Die, I'm going to give a 006.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Dr. No, I would give a 006.
And Dr. No
because
like,
I think, you know, I cut a lot of slack for being the first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And introducing a lot of fun stuff and, you know.
Okay.
This one I just felt like it felt very airless to me.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It was slow and it was not fun.
Right.
He clearly wasn't having a good time. Yeah. And, you know, the stuff that was good was really good, but there's a lot of stuff in between where it's just like
that is
you know, we're spinning our wheels here.
That's interesting. You know?
I do think even though that this one suffers from being middle of the road, which is the greatest sin for a Bond film for me. And as we know, I don't like that. But I do give it credit for
the greatest virtue of the music that you like.
That's right. That's right. I'm just putting that together.
That's what they used to call yacht rock, right?
Yeah,
it used to be called middle of the road. Yeah, M.O.R. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, even my favorite Bond songs, some of them are like that, like All Time High by Rita Coolidge. Yeah.
What a dismissive term.
Middle of the road, yeah.
Yeah.
What genre of music do you do? Nothing special.
It's not great. It's not terrible.
Don't worry about it.
Point is, you won't have a strong feeling either way.
It created some big shoes to fill for the rest of the Bond films.
Totally.
I don't know about that. I like the plot. I'm going to go strictly middle of the road, 3.5. Double O.
That is 100% correct. This is, as far as I'm concerned,
right or wrong.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a authority. This was personal opinion.
This defines the genre of middle of the road James Bond movie.
Yeah.
This one is no Thunderball, which is for me bottom. This is no Goldfinger, which is like great job. Mm-hmm. This is.
It's also the first to bloat the biggest to get to the extreme of the bubble before it goes back.
Yes.
You got
yeah.
You only live twice, Moonraker.
Completely.
What's next after this?
Well,
On Her Majesty's Secret
Service. Oh, okay.
That's the next film,
which is relatively down to earth in terms of a movie
and
like
just
this.
A beautiful story. Mm-hmm.
Well, glad I got to do this one.
So, well, you could be back. We
well, that would keep us in our Paul months.
We're doing them in no order,
we won't
Paul.
Make you.
We're just
right, we won't make
true.
You.
We're that's just we're true. Just picking whatever.
Although, look, you heard what that guy on Instagram told me.
You should have been watching On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Paul. You're so stupid. Okay, so the last thing I wanted to point out about the movie was the explosion scene. If you're watching on a Blu-ray, pay close attention to the miniature that's blowing up as you will watch tiny miniature humans bounce up and down, stiff as a board.
Oh, I wish I noticed up, that.
As it's
shit.
Blowing up. That's love Amira's it. Lookout for this.
Wow,
part of the,
I'm loft.
Now, okay, we have one. We have now done a Connery. We've hit everybody except for one man.
Wait, you're going to do it already? I thought we were saving that for Christmas.
We're saving it. Well, isn't it going to be Christmas by the time we're doing that?
I guess it's the season. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, you're then right. I'll change it up right
no,
now.
No, well, hold on. It's your choice. I don't want to take your choice. This will come out on the 21st, and then That would mean the next.
Okay, so this will
December 5th would be our next film.
Okay, and then we won't have another film until essentially December 21st.
No, 19th.
We could literally save it. Okay, so we should save it for around there.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I think the next film that we're going to watch. Oh, boy.
You got to say it.
This is the toughest part.
It is always the toughest part. We always think about it beforehand, and then we are put on the spot, and we change our minds.
Is there any order to this?
No order whatsoever.
We trade preference.
It's just dealer's choice.
Yeah.
Are you the dealer this time?
This time I am the dealer. Matt chose this. Oh, boy.
Do you want to cut?
Here it is. Here it is.
And then, all right.
Here it is. Oh, Paul, if you need to go, go.
I got
to
see what this is going to be.
It's Die Another Day.
I love it.
Oh,
wait a minute. What? We can announce this. Let's do that for our live show at UCB on the 7th.
But that
show.
That
will live in infamy?
Yes.
But that show that goes behind after. Stitcher. That goes, that's behind
is
the
that
Stitcher
right?
Behind the paywall.
Yeah. That's behind the paywall. So God, I don't want
to
do it.
Oh, so we're going to
do
it.
But we're
going to
do a real.
Yeah. All right.
No. So Diner of the Day. Kid.
I'm looking forward to this.
North Korea's in the news right now. I figure why not?
Fun.
Is it? Paul, thank you very much. Where can people find you and what can they find you doing?
I am at PF Tompkins on all the social platforms. I have my own podcast, Spontaneous Nation, that comes out every Monday on the Earwolf Network. And very excited to be returning to Sketchfest, San Francisco, January 12th and 13th so far. I'm doing a bunch of shows, including Spontaneous Nation Live and Work Juice Improv, and of course, Super Ego Forgotten Classics, second time we've ever done it live.
We had a great time doing it in New York.
Proof of concept.
That's right. And is it fair to say we know the title now? Should we announce it?
You tell me.
I think so.
Yeah, what is it going to be?
Lady Chatterley's Lover.
There we go. Lady Chatterley's Lover. This is a James Bonding exclusive.
Exclusive.
Tickets. You can get tickets for all the shows that I'm doing at paulftompkins.com/live.
Thank you, Paul.
Look for Matt and I also that weekend.
There we go.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Is it going
to
happen?
I think I'm going to fly to New York from San Francisco.
Is it going behind the paywall, though?
No.
It'll do whatever it wants. It does whatever we're contractually obligated for it to do.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. James Bonding
will return. James Bonding Podcast.
Earwolf is now on the Amazon Echo. They just released a new skill for the Echo smart speaker called Daily Earwolf. Now you can ask Alexa to play the funniest moments from your favorite Earwolf shows. Just download the Daily Earwolf skill from Amazon's Skill Store. And if you're a fan of Hello from the Magic Tavern,
and who isn't,
you can also download Magic Tavern Adventure.
That sounds wonderful.
It's a special interactive episode we did of Hello from the Magic Tavern where you can affect the choices we make in the podcast.
I don't think anyone can affect my choices.
I want to interactive.
No, Chunt, you interact. It just means that.
Yeah, I want to interactive. Where's the door?
So if you're listening to this right now and you want to say, Chunt, I wish you were not having this misunderstanding, you could yell that at your Amazon Echo, and it would happen.
Finally, you, dear listener, can help us choose our own adventure.
Download these awesome new skills, and remember, you can play any Earwolf podcast right from your Echo.
New skills. Time to level up.
New skills. Time to level up. Level up. I'm bad at being an Echo.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.